So we're holding on Nunchez Omid Beis, the third line of the wide lines, second line rather. And Mishnah had said, so after it described this whole business of Sikrikun, again, where you have a guy who's threatening to kill a yid, and the yid buys his life by giving away his field, by giving his field to the guy. Now, eventually, the guy wants to resell the field to another yid. So then we had in the Mishnah, the various stages of the din of what happens. So we said the original din was just that you have to go, if you're going to buy it from the Sikrikun, you first have to go check with the original Yisrael owner, and only then is the sale valid. Otherwise, the Yisrael has every right to say either that I'm doing it out of fear of the Sikrikun, because once you already paid him and arranged things with him, I was afraid to interfere. The Sikrikun might come back against me and accuse me of interfering with his sale. Or because the original yid can figure that Hasheni Noyachli, it'll be easier to take you, the second yid, to Beis Din than it would that Sikrikun. Anyway, then we said in the Mishnah, the second stage of the Takana was that you don't necessarily have to check with the original owner ahead of time, but you do have to pay them revia. Zumish and Rishona, the original din was that way, that you have to check with the original owner always. Based in Shalcharein Omru, a later based in said, Halakeach min a Sikrikun nois in the Bailam Revia. If you buy from a Sikrikun, you have to give the owner one quarter. So one quarter of what? Omer Rav, Revia Bakarka oi Revia Bamois. So Rav says it means one quarter of the land or one quarter of the amount of money that you paid the guy. So it was a field that you bought from the goy for a hundred, from the Sikrikun for 100. Then either you have to give the original owner 25, or you have to give him one quarter of the actual area of the field, says Rav. We'll see in a second why that is. Or Shmuel, why did the Chachamim first come up with the figure of Revia anyway? And what is, and why do, then why does Rav learn it that way? Or Shmuel Amar, Revia Bakarka Shehen Shlish Bamois. Shmuel says what it means is he has to give him one quarter of the land, which equals altogether one third of the money that he paid the guy. So in other words, he would have to, again, he paid 100, then he would have to be giving, he'd have to be giving the owner back a piece of the land that's equal to 33 and a third. Or he'd be paying so he'd be paying Revia Bakaka Shehen Shlish Bamois, which equals one third of the purchase price. So the Gemara said Bamai Kamifli. So what is the underlying argument? In fact, Rashi has a slightly different gear set in Shmuel Revia Bakaka Oy Shlish Bamois. It means a quarter of the karka or one third of the money. Tosfos also in Rav discusses different geosolis over here. Does it mean, is it like the way we have Revia Bakarka or Revia Bamois, or is it the other way around by Rav, maybe Revia Bakarka Shahu Revia Bamois, one quarter of the land, which equals one quarter of the money? So there are a few different geosolis. Anyway, the Gemara says, Bamai Kamifli, what is the underlying argument? Mar Sovin Nachi Revia Zovin, because Shmuel holds, now you have to consider like this. This guy, basically, from his point of view, he got the land for free. Actually, from everybody's point of view, really. I mean, he got the land for free. He didn't have to pay for it because he extorted it from the yid on the threat that he was going to kill him. Now, when he wants to sell it, he's not necessarily going to charge the full price for it because he doesn't need it. He just wants to unload it. Now that he extorted it successfully from the yid, he wants to be able to sell it and take the money and run. So how much does he discount it when he's selling it to somebody else? So Shmuel Marisover, so Shmuel holds Nachi Revia Zavin, he will discount it by one quarter. So in other words, so if he sold it for 100, means we have to figure the field is really worth 133 and change. So therefore, so you have to give, so that's 33 in effect. What you did is you gained, the second yid, Shimon, gained from the fact that you're buying from a Sikrikun, where an equivalent piece of land, if you were buying from somebody else, you would have had to pay 133 and change, and therefore you have to give that 33 to the owner. Omar Sovan, Nachi Chum Shazavin, whereas Rav says that he discounts by one fifth which means therefore, so if you paid 100, then really it was worth not 133, but 125. So therefore, you gain 25 by the discount that the goy gave you, and therefore you need to reimburse the original owner that 25. So in other words, in effect, with this takana, according to either Rav or Shmuel, what we're saying is that this way the original owner he's still somewhat losing out, but the fact is you, the second yid, are buying the land. That way, at least, you know, the Chachamim want to give the incentive. So the point is, with the second stage of the takana, the Chachamim want to give the incentive to a potential buyer to buy the land, because as much as possible, we do want the land in Eretz Yisrael to stay in the hands of Jews. So if you make him pay the full price to the Sikrikun, and then you also make him pay the full price to the original owner, nobody's going to want to buy it. Or if we tell him you first have to check with the original owner and come to terms with him, people may not be willing to. So like this, what we say is that, we tell the second buyer, we tell the buyer, look, you would have had to pay, according to Shmuel, 133, or according to Rab, 125 for an equivalent piece of land. Instead, you got away with paying only 100. Don't just take that money and run. Instead, go reimburse, go at least give that extra amount that you saved by buying from a Sikrikun, give it to the original owner. So that would be the underlying argument between Rab and Shmuel, what the percentages are. So Rashi and Tosfos both discuss what exactly we mean. So why would there be a difference? So is it the same thing whether you're giving him money or land, or are there differences in percentages with one or the other? Anyway, the Gemara says, Mesvi, I have a contradiction on Shmuel. A Braisa says, Zu Mishnah Rishon. Now, again, this that we said, that you first always have to buy it from the original owner before you even go to the Sikrikun, was the Mishnah Rishon. Based in Shalachrein Amru, but a later based in said Halakeach Min Asikrikun Nois in the Bailim Revia. You give a quarter to the owner so far, like in the Mishnah. But now the Braisa adds the Yad Bailim Al Hayona. The original owner has the upper hand, meaning he gets to pick what he's going to get. Rotsu B'Karka Noitlin, Rotsu B'Mois Noitlin. If the original owner wants the land, wants money, then if he wants the land, then you have to give it, and you have to give him that percentage of the land. And if he wants money, then you have to give him that percentage of the money when you're buying from a Sikrikun. A Masai, and when is all of that? Only, as the Mishnah had said, only when the original owner can't afford himself to buy it from the Sikrikun. But if the original owner is able to buy it himself, then, as the Mishnah had said, he gets first rights. And even if somebody else bought it, the original owner has every right to say to the new buyer, I'll reimburse you the full amount that you paid the goy, but give me back my land. On the other hand, the Braisa continues, as we said in the Mishnah, the Gemara is bringing the whole Braisa, as it often does, even though we've already quoted the part. That's even though we already quoted the part that seems to be the contradiction against Shmuel, because we already said revia, and it means a revia, whether of karka or of mois, which seems to contradict what Shmuel said, because Shmuel had said revia bakarka shehen shlish mamois, or revia bakarka oy shlish mamois, according to the different gersois. Anyway, so the Gemara already pointed out the part that contradicts Shmuel, but still, as the Gemara often does, it brings the rest of the Braisa. So the Braisa continues, like we said in the Mishnah, Rebbe Hoshev Beistin. Rebbe set up a Beis Din to decide on a third stage of the Stakana. The Nimnu, and they voted and decided, if the field remained in the Sikrikun's possession for 12 months or more, then anybody who buys it is zoiche in it, meaning we don't even say that let's look whether the original owner himself could have bought it back. Once 12 months have passed and he didn't bother, that it's free for it's freely available for anybody to buy. But the buyer still has to pay the original owner the one quarter of the karka, or the one quarter of the money. In other words, Rebbe and his Beis Din did not take away that part of the takana. So the point is, the Braisa is saying revia bakarka or revia bamois, and the first part also says nois on the bailam revia, and the owner can pick whether he wants that revia in karka or in mois. So we see. So how does that fit with what Shmuel is saying that it would be that if you're giving him land, that if you're giving him land, then it's a quarter, but if you're giving him money, then it has to be one third. So the Braisa would contradict Shmuel. The answer is Amar Rav Ashi, ki tanya hi la'achash boy mois the yodim. Rav Ashi answers, we can make the Braisa work according to Shmuel, because when it says one quarter of the money, it would mean after them, it would mean one quarter counting in terms of after it was already paid to the original owner. In other words, so in the case where the buyer bought the property, bought the property for 100 from the guy, and Shmuel is saying he has to now give the original owner 33. So altogether, how much has the buyer paid? 133. Of that 133, the 33 that he paid the owner is one quarter of it. So in other words, it's one third of the original, of the actual purchase price, but it's one quarter of the total amount of money that he's giving out goes to the original owner. Whereas Rav would understand it more straightforwardly, that it means the amount that you're paying the original owner is one quarter of what you paid the guy, which comes out to one fifth of the total amount that you're paying out, because you're paying 100 to the guy and 25 to the original owner. So therefore, so the Braisa, the wording of the Braisa, can work according to either Rav or Shmuel. Usually in Dini Mominus, the halacha is like Shmuel, and that's how it is over here. So therefore, it's Revia Bakarka, Shehen Shlish Bamois, so according to a different girsa, Revia Karka Oy Shlish Bamois is what you have to pay in order to deal with the Din of Sikrikun. Okay, so now we said that, that Rebbe had set up a base din to paskin on this. That in Rebbe had decided that we can't keep the original takana anymore. But Pashtus, the reason why they had the different stages of the takana, Pashtus would be having to do with what was going on in terms of you want to balance the rights of the original owner with the fact that you want to give a yid an incentive to buy back the land from the goy, so it doesn't just remain in the goy's hands indefinitely, or that will sell it to another goy or whatever. So therefore, the pashtus, that's the reason for the different stages in the thing. Anyway, Omar Rav. So Rav tells us, "Ano havoy b'minyona debei Rebbe." I was there during that vote of Rebbe's, meaning this vote that we're saying in the Mishnah and the Braisa, that the Chachamim voted to change the din of Sikrikun and make it that if it had already been 12 months in the Sikrikun's hand, then anyone who wants to buy it can do that without having to check with the original owner first, as long as they pay him his revia afterwards. So Rav says, I was one of the Chachamim who was voting in that. And I was the first one that they counted. I was the first one they asked, how do I vote in that? Now Rashi explains that he was actually one of the, so Rashi brings two possibilities. One is that Rav was one of the average level Chachamim over there. So you had ones who were greater than him and ones who were lesser than him, and he was somewhere in the middle. Rashi's second explanation is he heard from his Rebbeim that Rav was the most junior of the Chachamim over there. So the Gemara asks, why did they start with Rav? V'hanantnan, don't we learn in a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Dine Mominus Ataras Vatumas, when it comes to judging Dine Mominus or cases of Tara and Tumah, Maschilin Minagodol, then when you have a time when a Beis Din needs to vote and decide what the halacha is, then you start from the Godol, you start from the most senior member of the Beis Din. The Dinin of Foshus, Maschilin Atzad. When it comes to Dinin of Foshus, then you begin from the side, meaning then you begin from one of the lesser Dayanim. The idea behind it is that the Pasuk says, Voisana al Riv. Literally, it means you're not allowed. Literally, it means don't argue in a case of an don't speak up in the case of an argument. It actually over there talks about in the pasuk several different meanings of it, but one drasha of it is we darshan the word riv because it's written without a yud as though it said rav. So loisana al rav, don't argue against the rav, against the senior member of the Beis Din. So when it comes to Din and Nefashis, therefore, we want to keep that, and we want to make sure to ask the junior members first what they vote, and only then will we work our way up to the senior member, to the Av Beis Din. So now this was not a case of dini nefashos. So they should have started from Rebbe first, and then everybody would voice their opinion. Why did they start with Rav? Whether you say that Rav was one of the middling talmidim, or whether you say that he was the least of them. Either way, why are they starting with him? And the answer is Amar Rav Brei de Rav, the Itamer of Hillel Brei de Rav Valas. The answer is Shiny Minyana de Bei Rebbe. It's different when it came to the votes from the household, from the yeshiva, from the Beis Din of Rebbe. The Kula Minyanayim and Atzad Havu Maschilin, they always began from the side. They always began with one of the Ketanim rather than the greatest one. So when it comes to Dini Nefashos, we do that because of this pasuk Loisana Al Riv, and because we also don't want that. Like this, the senior member, the Ab Beis Din, is going to say, for example, this person is guilty, and all the other Chachamim on the Beis Din are going to think they have to follow him instead of voicing their own independent opinion. When it comes to Din and Mominus, we're not so worried about that. However, so Rashi explains that Rebbe and his Beis Din held differently. They held that this din of Loisana Al Riv does not apply only to dinim nefoshes. They held that it holds to din, that it applies to dinim mominus as well. Therefore, every time in that Beis Din, when they voted on a din, then they always and that would apply. By the way, of course, you know, we're talking about you vote on things that are gzeiros and takonis for the whole Jewish people, but you can also have a case where the halacha itself, you know, is unclear. For example, in Rebbe's times, they didn't have dinin nefashos, but let's say in dinin mominus, you can have where different chachamim see things differently, and some will say that Reuven is liable to pay Shimon, and others will say that he's not. So they vote. So again, the halacha, as it says in the Mishnah, is that with dinin mominus you can begin minatzad, but Rebbe held, says Rashi, that even by dinin mominus you should always begin by dinin mominus rather you could begin minagodol. You don't have to begin minatzad. It's fine if the eldest one, if the Av Beis Din says his opinion first. We're not so concerned that the other ones will think they have to follow his opinion. But Rebbe disagreed with that, says Rashi. Tosfos says that no. I mean, Rebbe is going to argue with that Mishnah and Sanhedrin. Okay, I mean, obviously he could as a Tana, but still, the Gemara, Tosfos assumes he's not going to. Rather, Tosfos says the reason is because Rebbe was an honor. We know famously from the end of Sotim, Shemes Rebbe, Bapa Anov of Yirashet. So therefore, because of his anivus, he didn't want to begin by saying his opinion first, and therefore he left it for one of the junior Talmidim to say first. A different point, the Sefer Dodos HaRishonim on Jewish history makes a different point. That when you think about it, Rebbe's Beis Din is not dealing with ordinary cases of dinei mominus. It's not like you have, Reuven is arguing with Shimon, your cow damaged mine, and then the other one says it didn't, and therefore you go to Rebbe's Beis Din, Lahavdil, like you wouldn't go with such a case to the Supreme Court. You go to one of the lesser courts. So therefore, by those, you have the difference between dinei mominus and dinei nefashos. When it comes to Rebbe's Beis Din, where they're making takonis for the whole Jewish people, then the argument is, the Gemara is saying that you'll always begin minatzad because those are matters of national importance. Okay. Since we mentioned something about Rebbe's Beis Din, so therefore the Gemara digresses a second to talk about something else about Rebbe. It's also about Rebbe. It's also brought by the same Rabba Brei de Rava, or some say Rabbi Hillel Brei de Ravalas. And there's also the Nimuka Yosef and Sanhedrin gives a reason that the Gemara is now going to say how great Rebbe was, that he had Toto Gdullah B'Makom Echad, so therefore that can also provide a reason why they would start Minatzad. They were more concerned that with his Beis Din, more than with others, that the other Talmidim might not feel themselves worthy to argue with Rebbe, and therefore that would be, and therefore that would compromise their objectivity, and therefore they would start Minatzad. So the Gemara says, Omer Rabba Brei de Rabba V'Tamer of Hillel, V'Omer Rabba Brei de Rabba V'Tamer of Hillel Brei de Valas, Moshe V'Ad Rebbe V'Metzino Toto Gdullah B'Makom Echad. From Moshe Rabbeinu's times until Rebbe, we never find Toto Gdullah B'Makom Echad, that the same person should be the greatest in Torah as well as the greatest in wealth. In Sanhedrin, Rashi explains a little bit differently that Moshe was greater, not so much in wealth. I mean, he was, but more also that he was the leader and he was the king, considered in certain ways, the halacha of the Jewish people. You never find that from Moshe Rabbeinu until Rebbe. So the Gemara asks, Valoi, you're telling me not? For Ahava Yoshua. What about Yoshua? In his times was also the greatest in Torah and in Gedolah. The answer is no, Hava Elazar. Because at the same time, you had a Elazar who was equal to him in greatness in Torah. And in fact, the Pasuk says in Parshas Pinchas, that Yoshua is supposed to be standing in front of Elazar to ask him the Urim Maturim, to ask him questions in Halacha. Okay, the Gemara asks, Hava Elazar. Well, okay, so after Yoshua passed away, then Elazar remains the only one, remains the Yochid B'Dodo. The answer is, have a Pinchas. You also have Pinchas at that point, who Pinchas is Elazar's son, granted, but the fact is that the fact is they're both equal in knowledge of Torah, and therefore you can't say that Elazar had Torah or Gdol of Machmacha. The Gemara asks, well, have a Pinchas. Fine, so after Elazar passed away, then you have Pinchas is Torah or Gdol of Machmacha. And the answer is no. Havu skenim. In his times, you still have the skenim, the psukim that mentioned the skenim that harichu yomim achre Yoshua, that they outlived Yoshua and they were still around in Pinchas' times. So therefore, so you can't say that Pinchas is the exclusive god Ladur. So the Gemara says, okay, let's skip. I'll have a Shol. Eventually, you have Shol, who was the king and also was tremendously great in Torah. Rashi points out, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that he didn't teach people a Torah as much as he should, but he was the greatest in Torah in his time. The answer is he wasn't. Have a Shmuel, because at the same time you had Shmuel on Navi lived, who was actually greater in Torah. So the Gemara asks, v'hanoch nafshe, but we find that Shmuel passed away before Shol, now by Yeshua and Elazar. The Gemara didn't ask that because apparently they both passed away around the same time, but here, we know that there was a period, Shmuel passed away 4 months before Shol. So therefore, during those 4 months, isn't Shol having Torah Gdol of Machem Echad? The Gemara answer is true, but Kulu Shnei Kamrinam. What we're trying to find is somebody who had Torah Gdol of Machem Echad during his entire career. From when Moshe became the leader of the Jewish people until he passed away, he had Torah Gdol of Machem Echad. There was nobody of his equal in Torah or in Gdula, as far as riches or as far as leadership over the Jewish people. And that you didn't have, that combination you didn't have again until Rebbe. Shol, yes, for that period of 4 months he had it, but not throughout his entire career as king. So the Gemara continues, well, have a David. What about in David's times where he was the greatest in Torah? And the answer is, have a Ira HaYairi. There was in his times Ira HaYairi, who was his Rebbe in Torah. We're actually up to when we learn the next piece of Ein Yaakov in the afternoons over here, we'll get to that. But Ira HaYairi was David's Rebbe. It's a Gemara in Erevin. So David is not the top one in Torah. Again, the question is, V'hanoch nafshe, Ira HaYairi passed away during David's lifetime. And again, the answer is, Kulushni Kamrinan, we're talking about throughout all his years. We want to find somebody who throughout his whole career was Torah Gdol of Machem Echad. Now, why is the Gemara asking the same question if the answer is the same? Sometimes the Gemara will do that. Sometimes the Gemara will ask the same question again. Sometimes the Gemara will ask rather a different question, even if it knows that you could answer with the same answer, because the Gemara wants to see if you can find a better answer. Ben Yoyada points out also, now you could say with Shol and Shmuel, it's only 4 months. With Ira HaYairi, it's a much longer period of time, and therefore the Gemara thinks that maybe that should count as Torah Gdol of Machem Echad. And nevertheless, no, because when David became king, then the Ira HaYairi was still alive. So therefore, you don't have the entire 40 years of his kingship Torah Gdol of Machem Echad. Okay, the Gemara asks, "I have a Shloima. What about Shloima in his times? Had Torah Gdol of Machem Echad?" The answer is, "Have a Shimi ben Gera." In Shloima's times, you had Shimi ben Gera, who was his Rebbe. The question is, "Hakatle?" But we find that Shloima executed Shimi ben Gera. You have the whole story over there at the beginning of Sefer Melachim. That Shimi ben Gera, we know, had cursed and reviled David when he and his men were escaping from Avshalom. Later on, David was moichel him, but still he tells Shloima it's an aftorah vayichi. He tells him, realize that this Shimi ben Gera is a dangerous character and keep your eye on him and find some way that he's going to end up being murdered by Malchus and Chayav Misa. And eventually he was, and then therefore eventually Shloima had him executed. So for the rest of Shloima's career then, he had Torah Gdol of Machem Echad. Again, the answer is Kol Ushni Kamrinan. We want to find somebody where it was throughout his career, and with Shloima you didn't have that. Okay. The Gemara says, "I have a chizki."
Sorry, he didn't see the mile of as a student of David HaMelech that he should want to be go against him.
First of all, Shimi wasn't David HaMelech's Rebbe; he was Shloimeh's Rebbe. But we're saying that he was Shloimeh's Rebbe. But we're saying nevertheless, he was a great Talmid Chacham. But he also, when David was running away over there, he saw the opportunity to. He was actually from Shaul's family, and he held it against David that he had taken the kingship, where he felt that rightly it should have somehow stayed in Shaul's family, and therefore he's cursing out and reviling David and telling him you deserve everything you're getting, that you're a bloodthirsty man, and therefore you deserve that your son is rebelling against you, and so forth. So later on, when David was reinstated in the kingship, then Shimi came to ask Mechila, but David still says to Shlomo later on that you realize that Shimi is a dangerous character and make sure that you find some way to demonstrate that he really is a murderer of Malchus and is Chayav Nisa. But nevertheless, David realized how great he was in Torah and had him as a Rebbe for Shlomo. So to continue, the Gemara asks, "Tohava Chizkiah? What about Chizkiyahu, who in his times was the king of Yehuda, and in his times the Aseres HaShavatim went into Golos? So in effect, you can say that he's Torah Gdula among the Jews who are left." And he's also tremendously great Talmud Chacham and the king. The answer is have a Shevna. You had Shevna in his times, who actually was a greater Talmud Chacham. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that Shevna had more Talmidim than Chizkiah. Again, the question is, how Iktil? Shevna was killed by Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells the story how that happened. And the answer to the Gemara says whether Shevna was a Rosha and he was planning to surrender to Sanhedrin, and in the end he was killed. And the answer is Kulushni Kamrin. And again, we want to find somebody who was Toto Gilam Makamach throughout his entire career, and Chizkiyahu was not. Again, with each of these, you can say that the Gemara is asking the same question because it wants to see if there's a better answer, and each time it's saying no, that's the best answer, or because each time we can find something different about this case that we would think maybe, for example, this last one, Shevna was a Rosha, maybe we shouldn't count him at all, and nevertheless, the fact is he does count, he did have more Talmidim than Chizkiyahu in his good days. Okay, the Gemara asks for Ahava Ezra. What about Ezra at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash? He had total Gilab Mokam Echad. The answer is no. Have a Nechemya ben Chachalia. You had Nechemya ben Chachalia at the time. He wasn't a greater Talmud Chacham than Ezra, but he did have Dula because he was the governor under Persian rule, where Ezra did not have that. Ezra did not have that power. Ezra is the teacher of Torah to the Jewish people. Nechemya is the one with the political power. So now at this point, the Gemara realizes that, yeah, you've gone through all the possible candidates, and really it does come out that from Moshe until Rebbe, you don't have Torah Gdula, the exclusive Torah Gdula, but Makom Echad. So the Gemara continues, Omer of Acha Brei D'Rava, Afani Omer, I can also say, Rav Acha Brei D'Rava was one of the later Amiroyim, I can also say, Mimos Rebbe, V'ad Rav Ashi, Lo Matsuno Torah Gdula, Makom Echad. Also from Rebbe and Torah of Ashi, you don't find Torah Gdula, Makom Echad. And the importance of this is, by the way, it shows, Mephoshim point out, it shows that all three of the basic components of Torah all had to be given to us through somebody who was Torah Gdolam Makom Echad. Torah Shebichsav through Moshe, Torah, the Mishnah through Rebbe, and the Gemara through Rav Ashi. So therefore, Hashem arranged it that each of them is going to have Torah Gdolam Makom Echad. So the Gemara asks, well, have a Huna bar Nosan. What about in Rav Ashi's times, he had Huna bar Nosan, who had Torah Gdula B'Makom Echad? Huna bar Nosan was one of the Chachamim. We also find that he had great political power. Tosfos refers to a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Not Sanhedrin, in Zvachim rather, that tells how one time he was standing at an audience in front of the king of Persia, and the king personally adjusted his belt that it should be worn nicely. And later on, Rav Ashi tells him that this is like what the pasuk says, "Bahoyu malachim oim nayach," kings will be your caretakers. So we see that he had Gdula and he had Torah as well, because it was a great Talmud Chacham. And in fact, Rav Shuda Goin tells us in his Igeres that this Huna bar Nosan was the Reish Galusa, which has tremendous political power in those times. And the answer is Shiny Huna bar Nosan, the make of Habakkuk Leilat Rav Ashi. As much as he was a great Talmud Chacham, he was still subject to Rav Ashi because Rav Ashi was the Rosh Yeshiva, and Huna bar Nosan treated himself as one of the Talmidim. So therefore, you can't say that he had Torah Gdula B'Makom Echad. So therefore, that justifies saying that Rav Ashi did. The Mishnah continues now with another thing that's Mipnei Darkei Shalom. The Mishnah says Cheresh. Now a Cheresh, a deaf mute. Now we know in Halacha he doesn't have Das, as we've talked about before. So therefore, on the face of it, he shouldn't be able to do business. He shouldn't be able to do business, so he shouldn't be able to accomplish anything in life because he has no Das. Nevertheless, Roimez v'Nirmaz, he can signal, he can use sign language, for example, and he can be signed to, and that way it'll be valid. That way he's able to buy and sell that way, and the Chachamim are going to consider that valid. He'll be able to do Kiddushin and Gerushin that way. You do have to check them. Mefoshim point out, you do have to check them and make sure that he actually does have Das, and it's not just that he's a Cheresh and he's also crazy. But once you find he is normal, he just has this disability, then you can do Roimas v'Nirmas, then whatever he, based on what he signals, then you can do business, you can transact business, or you can have him do Kiddushin or a Get or whatever. Ben Beseira Oima Koifetz v'Nikbatz. Ben Beseira says he can do Koifetz or Nikbatz. So Rashi explains Remiza, Roimas v'Nirmas would be with sign language, with his head, or with his, by moving his hands or by moving his head in a particular direction. Kfitza, Rashi says, would be moving his lips. So he just moves his lips, but he doesn't actually say anything because he can't speak. Nevertheless, Ben Beseira is saying that would work also. On the other hand, the Ravid gives an explanation that kfitza literally means jumping. And he explains that Ben Beseira is being more machmir than the Tanakama and saying it's not enough for him to just move his lips. He would actually have to jump from one place to another to demonstrate that he wants to do such and such. Anyway. So that's a corner of the Chachamim, again, because of Tikkun Olam, in order to make it possible for him to do business. And Ben Beseder says, but Metautlin, that's only as far as Metautlin, that he can do Koifetz v'Nikbatz. And the Mishnah continues, another Tekona, Hapo'oitis, children, and we're going to see in the Gemara what age children we're talking about, Mikochan Mekach, Mimkonan Mimker, B'Metautlin, their purchases are considered valid purchases in Halacha, and their sales are valid sales when it comes to Metautlin. For reasons that the Gemara is going to discuss in the Gemara, basically because we need to make it possible for them to live. You can have, earlier we learned about earlier in the Perek about a child who's a Yosem and has an apotropos, but they don't always necessarily. Sometimes a child might be living and managing things on his own. You want to be able him to be able to have Kedei Chayev, that he should be able to buy and sell things in order to have food to live on. Okay, the Gemara says, Omer of Nachman, Machloikas b'metautlin. This Machloikas in the Mishnah between the Tanakama and Ben Beseira about whether he needs to be Roimas v'Nirmas or whether he needs, or whether Koifetz v'Nikbatz is enough. According to Rashi, that Koifetz v'Nikbatz is less because it just means moving his lips. Or according to the Raivan, that Koifetz v'Nikbatz is more because it means jumping. Anyway, that Machloikas is by Metautlin. Abel b'Gittin divrahakol b'Remiza. But when it comes to Gittin, everybody agrees that you need Remiza. Now you can have, Rashi points out, Midaraisa, of course, a Cheresh wouldn't be able to get married because he needs to have Das, and a Cheresh doesn't have Das. Midrabbanan, the Chacham set up the concept of marriage for a Cheresh, because otherwise he may stay like that his whole life. He may never be able to get married. But look, his marriage exists only Drabbanan. So the same Chachamim who said that he can get married with Remiza, that he signals to a woman to tell her that I'm handing you this money or whatever for the sake of Kiddushin, the same way when he gives a get, he can also do Remiza to aid him and tell them to write a get on his behalf. So by Gittin, you do need Remiza, and Kfitze is not enough. So the Gemara says, Pshita b'metautlin tanan. Well, obviously, the Mishnah had used the word b'metautlin, so obviously that's what it is. It's limited to metautlin. The answer is Maudetema, without Rab Nachman telling us, you would have thought after Metalplin Kamash Malon. Maybe the Mishnah means that also by Metalplin this helps, and how much more so by Gittin Kamash Malon. Therefore, Rab Nachman says that by Get, it's not enough to just move his lips. He'd actually have to do Roimas v'Nirmas. He'd actually have to make motions with his hands, whether with his hands or his head or whatever. You have the Ravid saying that kfitza means jumping, and you have other Rishonim, the Ritva, and others that say that the kfitza would actually mean to actually take the object and give him the money, where therefore, said Rav Nachman is saying, by Gittin, that wouldn't be enough. He actually has to motion with his hand or his with his hands or his mouth or whatever, with his hands or his head or whatever. Ikadamri, another version is Amram Nachman, Kimachlokas from a toplin, Kach Machlokas begitin. The second version is Ram Nachman says, no, the same machlokas that you have by Metalin, you'd have by Gittin, and according to the Chachamim, according to the Tanakama, Roimiz would be enough, and according to Ben Beser, Koifetz would be enough, or Koifetz would be necessary, as the case may be. So the Gemara asks, why? The Mishnah said only Metalin, and the answer is, Ema, after Metalin, according to the second version, the Mishnah means that this works by Metalin, and also it works by a get. So the Gemara says, so that's that. So you have two different versions, and as usual, when the Gemara has so by Gittin, therefore you do need to have Remiza. He does need to signal, and we need to know that he has Das, and then he can give a get on that basis. Then we said in the Mishnah, Hapo'otas Mekhan Mekach Mimkoin Mimka Mimtalin, we said children's sales and purchases are valid when it comes to Mimtalin. Kauka not, by the way. The Gemara elsewhere explains that a person can't sell Kauka until he's 20, or at least Kauka that he inherited from his father. The Ad Kama, so the question is, up to from what age do we consider that they're able to buy and sell and it's valid Lahalacha? So the Gemara says, "Machbi Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yitzchak Brei, Rabbi Yehuda showed his son Rabbi Yitzchak kabar shis kabar shev when the child was 6 or 7 years old. So it can mean that he signaled, like he motioned to Rabbi Yitzchak to put up his fingers or whatever to show that it's 6 or 7. One of the notes in the back of the Gemara, Hagoris Ben Arya from the father of Yisrael Salanter, gives a different explanation, means that when they were discussing this in the Beis Medrash, then Rabbi Yehuda pointed to his son Rabbi Yitzchak, who at the time was 6 or 7, and said that age. Rav Kahana, Omer Kabar Shev, Kabar Tamni. Rav Kahana says the age, the minimum age, would be 7 or 8 years old. The Masnisa Tana, Kabar Teisha, Kabar Eser, and a Braisa says 9 or 10. So the Gemara says V'loy Pligi. Now there's not actually a machloikus between these various Chachamim. Each one is going based on the child as far as his sharpness. So depends. In other words, you have some children who already at 6 years old understand how money works and how buying and selling works. And for them, it would be valid already at age 6. And other children, it takes until 10 years old before they realize how these things work. So depending on how sharp and how smart the child is, then that'll be the age when the Chachamim determine that his buying and selling is valid. So the time of my, what's the underlying reason why the Chachamim made this takana? Amar Rab Abba by Yaakov, Amar Rab Yechanan, Mishum Kedei Chayav, to make it possible for him to live. In fact, Rashi says this applies to the Cheresh of the Mishnah as well, because otherwise, if he can't sell or buy validly, in other words, if you're saying that he could sell something and later on he could come back and change his mind and said, I didn't want to sell it, nobody's going to want to do business with him, and therefore he won't be able to get money to buy food, or vice versa, he won't be able to buy food, and therefore the Chachamim made that his sales and purchases are irrevocable, like an adult. So since we're mentioning something that Abba Bar Yaakov said in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, so the Gemara digresses a minute to tell us something else, a little piece of Agadah that also he said. Apparently, this is one of those things. Rabbi Abba Bar Yaakov doesn't appear very often in the Gemara, so when we have a chance to mention him, then we mention something else from him as well. Now you have like this in Sefer Melachim. It tells the story how so you have Achav had brought in Avodah Zarah into Eretz Yisrael. Before him, you had the Eglei Azahav of Yeravam, which they weren't actually strictly speaking true Avodah Zarah in the sense that it was made, so to speak, in honor of Hashem, even though it's also to do that. But at least it wasn't meant to worship a different power. Achav and Izevo brought an actual Avodah Zarah, Baal, Asher, or whatever. Later on, eventually, Hashem sends Yehu and has him anointed as king with the job of wiping out the whole family of Achav and getting rid of Avodah Zarah from Eretz Yisrael. So the Pesukim describe over there how Yehu decided to do this by a trick. He announces he's going to have a great festival in honor of Baal, and everybody who worships it has to come. And they come into the building, and then once they're all in the building, to make a long story short, then Yehu has all the soldiers kill them, and that was the end of Baal worship in among the Jewish people. Anyway, the pasuk describes over there in the middle of the story. By Yomer la'asher al ha'meltocha, Yehu says to the one in charge of the meltocha, And we'll explain in a second what that is. Hotze levush l'chol avdei ha'baal, bring out uniforms for all the people who worship Baal. The point is that Yehu was concerned. He didn't want. You might have people came just to watch because they're interested to see what's going to happen over there at this great festival of Baal, but they're not actually avdei ha'baal themselves and they shouldn't be killed. But if they put on the uniform, and then it shows they're not just there as spectators, they're there as among the worshippers, and then the soldiers can kill them. They didn't know that yet, but anyway, the point is that what is this word, my meltocha? So the simple meaning of meltocha means something like the wardrobe, but in fact, in modern Hebrew, they use it exactly in that sense. But the Gemara understands it means a special kind of clothing. Dover hanimlal v'nimtach. It's something. It's fabric that's made by nimlal. You roll it between your fingers when you're first making it, and then that's how you stretch out the threads, and then the nimtach, and it stretches out. So in other words, it's a high quality kind of linen where you make the fibers very thin, and you stretch them out by rolling them between your fingers. So the Gemara says, "Ki also of dini omer Rabbi Yechanan, shigur loy bunyam ben nunyam l'Rebbe." To give you an example of what kind of clothing meltocha would be, how much it stretches bunyam ben nunyam, which was a rich yid, one time sent Rebbe as a present four kinds of linen garments, sikhni v'choyma sausala umalmala. These are four different qualities of linen garments. And of them, Sivni v'chumam kam goza. The first two, the Sivni and the Choymam, the fabric of them was so stretchy that you could fit the actual garment when you folded it up. It would be the size kam goza, palgadam goza, the size of 1.5 walnuts. So it was large enough to cover Rebbe's whole body when it was unfolded. But when it was folded, you could fold it down into a piece the size of a walnut and a half. And the salsala or mamala, kapistico, palga de pistica, the other two, the salsala and the mamala, you could fold them down to the size of an acorn and a half. And the Gemara points out, my mamala, that fourth kind, why is it called mamala? Again, like the meltocha, davar nimla v'nimtach, because it's something that you roll between your fingers when you're spinning it, and thereby you stretch it. So these are very stretchy fabrics. So in other words, you can fold them down to a tiny little bit, but yet they expand to cover the body of the person. So this is an example of the meltocha that we're talking about from Yehu's times. Okay. Getting back now to this, the Gemara had brought this in again as a side thing because we mentioned Rabbi Abba bar Yaakov, so therefore the Gemara mentioned another thing from him. So getting back to the children, where we said that if they buy or sell, it's valid. But to usan ad kama, what about if they make a mistake in the value of something? Now we know with an adult, you have the rule that if you make a mistake in the price up to 1/6, then we say you're moichel on it. If the mistake is exactly 1/6, then you have the dinim of a nar kick in. So then the one who was defrauded, and then let's say the buyer sold it for less than it was supposed to be worth, or the seller sold it for less than it was supposed to be worth, and now he wants to cancel the deal, or the buyer bought it for too much, and now he wants to cancel the deal. So the din is with 1/6. It's kono machzor einar. The sale is still valid, but the einar, the under or overvalue, has to be reimbursed. And if it's above 1/6, then bottle mekach. Then he has the right to cancel the deal and start all over. So the question is, what about my children? Do you apply the same thing? So omer rab yoina, omer rab zera, ad shtus kegadol. It means up to 1/6, like a gadol. So yeah, the rules are the same thing. Up to 1/6. So Rashi says up to 1/6 kono machzorina and more than 1/6 batal mekach. There is actually the Magid Mishnah in Rambam and Hilchos Mechira says that there seems to be words missing in Rashi over here, and Rashi means to say that it would be exactly the same as with an adult, that meaning that up to 1/6 would be mechila. The way we have it in front of us in Rashi is that even the mistake is less than 1/6. We would still count it as a nah, and the child would have the right afterwards to say, wait, I didn't charge you enough. But the Magen Mishnah over there says that no, Rashi means to say that it's exactly the same as an adult, up to 1/6. The child is meichel, and beyond that, then you have the dinim of a nah. The Gemara continues, boya baya matnosei mai. What about if the child gives something as a present or receives something as a present? Does the same takana apply, or is it when metalbim? Is it the same kind of thing? On the one hand, you could say if it's only kedei chayav, that should give us reason to allow him to buy and sell, but not necessarily to give presents. On the other hand, you could say, why do you give a present? As we learned earlier in the Masechta, the reason would be somebody did you a great favor, and therefore you want to give them a present. So maybe you could say the same thing. You want to give people an incentive to do favors for kids, and therefore the kids' matona to somebody else should be valid. So the Gemara says, Rav Yema Omer Ein Matnasa Matnona, Ma'a Rav Ashi Omer Matnasa Matnona. So Rav Yema says that it would not be considered a valid gift because we're only doing a kedei chayev and a gift is not relevant to that. Ma'a Rav Ashi says it would apply to a gift as well. So the Gemara says, Apchua v'shadrua l'kamei Rav Mordechai. They switched around the two opinions and sent it to Rav Mordechai. So it could be that they mistakenly switched them. They mistakenly thought that they mistakenly reversed the opinions. It could also be some of Foshan talk about they did it deliberately because they wanted to see what Rav Mordechai is going to pass in. So he tells them, Zilu imrile the bar mar, go tell the son of my Rebbe, Ma'ab Rav Ashi is the son of Rav Ashi, who was Rav Mordechai's Rebbe. We had before, Rav Ashi had Turo Gdulab Mokam Echad, so Rav Mordechai was one of his Talmidim. So Rav Mordechai tells him, go tell the son of my Rebbe, meaning Ma'ab Rav Ashi, Lav Hochi Hava Uvda. Don't you know that there was a story like this, Ki Hava Koi Mar, when my Rebbe, when Rav Ashi was standing, Chad Karia Ara, V'chad Karia Darga, he had one foot still on the ground and the other foot was on the steps or the ladder to go up to the second floor of the Beis Medrash. We asked Rav Ashi this very same question, what's the din with the matona of a cotton? And he told us his matona is a matona. And he continues, achas matnas shchivah rabba achas matnas bari. And it doesn't matter whether this matona is being done when the child is a shchivah or when he's healthy. And v'achas matonim aruba v'achas matonim u'etas, doesn't matter whether it's a large present or a small one. Either way, it's valid. So therefore, Rav Mordechai is saying, Rav Ashi, you should remember that little episode over there, and therefore you should remember that your father, Rav Ashi, said that it is a matona. So don't tell us, says Rav Mordechai to the people who came to him, don't tell me, if you're telling me that Rav Ashi says that it's not a matona, then you should know he's making a mistake because he should remember that his father said differently. So if we said they switched around the opinions by mistake, then now they realize their mistake, that it was Ramah Rav Ashi who had in fact said Matnose Matona. If you say they switched it around deliberately, then now they know that Mordechai is passing that way, not just because he wants to follow Ramah Rav Ashi or something, or not because he specifically wants to follow Rav Yema or Ramah Rav Ashi, but because this is actually how he heard it from Rav Ashi. Tosfos points out that all this would apply only to Metalkalim. Karka would be different, because otherwise the Gemara should have said, also Rav Ashi should have said, that this applies whether to Kauka or Metalkalim. And it doesn't, so it implies that this whole business about a child giving or receiving a matana and it being valid would be only as far as Kauka. Now the Mishnah says, now that we've been talking about for the last 25 or so blocks, we've been talking about things that were done Mipnei Dauke Sholem. Till now we were talking about Mipnei Tikkun Olam, really, in order to make society function the way it should. So now this Mishnah is going to continue with the related thing of things that are done Mipnei Dauke Sholem for the sake of peace. This and the next Mishnah are going to talk about such things. So the Mishnah says, Elu Dvorim Omer Mipnei Dauke Sholem. The Chachamim said the following halachas that are Mipnei Dauke Sholem in order to promote peace between one yid and another. First of all, Koyen Kore Rishon V'Achrav Levi V'Achrav Yisrael Mipnei Dauke Sholem. The Uru of Aliyah says Koyen Levi Yisrael, and that way for Dauke Sholem, because that way otherwise you're going to have people are going to argue who gets the first Aliyah. So therefore, the Chachamim set up a standard thing: the Koyen will get the first Aliyah. Also, Ma'arvin Bebayis Yoshin Mipnei Dauke Sholem. When it comes to an Eid of Chatzeres, so nowadays it's common, you know, we make an Eid of Chatzeres and we put a box of matzah away for the whole year. In those times, the more normal way of doing it was they would collect the food for the Eid of Chatzeres on a weekly basis. Someone would go around to all the houses and collect some food, and then they would put it in one of the houses, and that would be the Eid of Chatzeres. Now, the din is the house where the Eid of is being kept doesn't need to provide food towards the Eid of Chatzeres. So the Mishnah is saying, Ma'arin Mabayis Yoshan, you should continue to put the Eruv in the same house, in the old house that it was before, because of Daukes Shalom. The Gemara will actually explain on Sama Chom and Beis what the Daukes Shalom is involved over there. The Gemara is going to end up saying that it's Chashad. That's a matter of that if people are used to seeing the Eruv in this house, now if it's moved to a different house, people are going to think that maybe the people of the Chotzer are carrying without an Eruv, or they're going to think that the Balabais ate it. So because of that, Daukes Shalom, then we want to keep it in the same house all the time. Another din, bur shu korevama, the whichever water pit is closest to the water channel. So you have a canal that brings water from the main river to the fields. And then they have water pits dug in the ground, so that way they can keep those as a reservoir in case the canal dries up. And they'll still have water to water their fields. So therefore, so what they do is, so they divert the canal into those pits in order to fill them, and then they keep the water around as a reserve in case of emergencies. So now the takana is whichever pits are on the upper fields, meaning the fields on higher ground, which are closer to the source of the water, because water flows downhill. The smaller rishon, that pit gets filled first. So first, in other words, so the landowner. The landowner on the higher ground upstream has the right first to divert the canal to fill up his pit, and then when he's done, then the next one can divert it to fill up his pit, and so forth. Again, with Nedarke Shalom, because of peace, because otherwise they're going to argue who gets it first. Another din, Metzodes Chayav Ofis V'Dogim, traps for wild animals or birds or fish. Again, yesh ben mishum gezel upnei daukes shalom, the concept of gezel applies to them. If an animal or whatever was trapped in one of these traps and somebody else comes and takes it, midaraisa, it wouldn't be gezel, but midarabanan, we consider it gezel upnei daukes shalom, because otherwise they're going to get into fights. Rabbi Yossi Omer, gezel gomer. Rabbi Yossi says it's actually considered gezel gomer, and Rashi explains. Rabbi Yossi also agrees that it's daraisa, it's not gezel, because the Gemara is going to point out we're talking about over here a type of trap which is not actually, it's not actually a keli, so it can't really be considered. If it was a keli, then you would say his keli was kona for him. We're talking about kind of traps that are not really considered a keli, so daraisa, he wasn't kona. So the Chachamim, the Tanakhama, is saying that midrabanan, it's just mipnei daukes shalom. Rabbi Yossi says midrabanan, it's considered gezel gomer. The nafkamina would be if the owner of the trap comes to Beis Din, does he have the ability to take it away from the other guy? According to the Tanakhama, no. According to Rabbi Yossi, yes. Another din, mitzias cheras shot of a cotton. If a cheras shot of a cotton finds something, and again they have no das, yesh ben mishum gezel mipnei daukes shalom. The same thing. The Chachamim made a takana that they are koneh, but they daukes shalom, so they don't fight over it. And again, Rabbi Yossi, gezel gomer, again, Rabbi Yossi says that midirabanan, they made it gezel gomer to the extent, even in other words, that the cheder shoyt v'katan would have the right to take the other person to Beis Din and get the object back. And the last din, ein machin biadaniya ov gechovim beleket shikcha peya. When it comes to collecting leket shikcha and peya from a yid's field, those are supposed to be reserved for Jewish poor. But if a goyish, a poor person, comes and collect them, we don't protest. We don't prevent them from taking it. Again, nedarke shalom, in order to promote peace. Here we're talking about between Jews and goyim, but there's the same idea. In other words, that if nedarke shalom, we allow the goy to collect. So let's talk first about this first din in the Mishnah that we said the order of Aliyah is Kohen Levi Yisrael. So why Davka does the Kohen get first? We know you need a Takonim, Nedaka Shalom, but why did the Chachamim set it up that a Kohen goes first? Omer Rav Masna, so Menani Mili, Omer Rav Masna, to Omakra, Vayichtev Moshe as a Torah Azois, Moshe wrote the Torah, Vayitna al Kohen and B'nei Levi, and he gave it to the Kohen and the sons of Levi. Now, why does it need to mention the sons of Levi? Don't we already know that the Kohanim are descendants of Levi? Why bother mentioning it? Ella, so therefore, in this connection with the Torah, we doubt it means Kohen Bereshiv or Hodo Levi. We're hinting at that when it comes to the Torah, then we have Kohanim and then Levim. Rav Ashi says a different Jerusha Mehocha, a Posig and Divra Yamim. B'nei Amram Aaron Umosha. Amram's sons were Aaron Umosha. By Yibodol Aaron, but Aaron was singled out and separated out, like Dusha Kodesh Kadoshim, to make him holy of holies. So we see the Kohen needs to be treated with extra Kedusha, and therefore he gets the first W. He was another Durasha. The pasuk says about a kohen, the kidashto, you should make him holy. Means make him holy as far as everything of kedusha. He should be first. And the Gemara says, in fact, Tonin Ve Rabbi Shmuel. We learn a brisa from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel along those lines. The kidashto means lachol davar shebekdusha, means when everything of kedusha liftoyach rishon. It means that he should be the first one to open the Torah reading, and also, for example, to give a Dvar Torah or whatever, or the Vorich Rishon, to be the first one to lead benching. So it means to lead benching, and elsewhere in the Dorim, we learned also the Mefarish said over there, it meant to say Hamotzi as well, honor him with saying Hamotzi. The little Mona Yofer Rishon, and to take a good portion first, meaning when you're giving out portions of food, honor the Kohen by giving him by allowing him to choose the nice portion first. Tosfos says, we don't just mean, for example, by a meal, there Adarabi, you have a Gemara in Pesachim that says you shouldn't do that. Rather, we're talking about over here, for example, Maisu Oni or Tzedakah, or people are together. Or he says also, yeah, people are together at a meal, then you give the Kohen the choice of the first best piece. So we see from that, so therefore, by the same token, then L'Toyach Rishon, so we have him lain from the Torah first. So the Gemara says, So what is the Mishnah telling us? That the fact that the Kohen lanes first, that gets an aliyah first, is Daraisa, based on everything we just said, it's Daraisa. So it shouldn't be listed among Takonis of Achamim. So Rabbi Yosef says, okay, it means Daraisa, Nedakisholim. Means it's Daraisa, but the Torah itself, set it up that way, Nedakisholim. Abai says, call our Torah, call an Amim, Nedakisholim. The whole Torah is Nedakisholim. Dichtib Drocher Dache Noyam, the Torah's ways are ways of pleasantness, Vachonus Yveseh Sholem, and all its paths are Drocher Dache Noyam, its ways are ways of pleasantness, Vachonus Yveseh Sholem, and all its paths are peace. So therefore, so yeah, of course it's Nedakisholim, the whole Torah is. Ela Omar Abai says, no, what it means is like this. Yes. As far as that the Kohen gets the Aliyah first, that's Midaraisa, because of the Kiddashto. What we mean, Mifnei Daki Sholem, L'chidimar. The Mishnah is hinting at a din that my Rebbe said. Rav Ashi's main Rebbe was Rabba, and throughout Shas, he calls him Mar. So like this, Netanya, we learn in a Braisa, Shnayim Mamtinen Zelaz Abakora. Two people who are eating together, if one of them stops eating for a while, he's drinking something, or he went to the bathroom or whatever, one has to wait for the other for taking the food from the plate. The first one, the one gets up to go to the bathroom, or he's drinking in between. The second one can't say, I can continue taking whatever I want. He has to wait. But shlosha ein mamtinim, but if it's three, they don't have to wait. They can continue eating while the first one is not available. And the Braisa continues, these are all dinim of derech eretz by a meal. Habetzeya hu poshit yodei tchila, whoever made the bracha hamotzi and cut the bread to be motzi everybody else, he's the one who sticks out his hand first to take some of the tavshil, to take some of the cooked food that they're eating together with the bread, to be able to eat, to be able to accompany the bread with. The imba lachlat cover the rabbi lemisha godu menu, but if he wants to give honor to his rebbe or to somebody else who's greater than him and allow him to take from the food first, harushus biyada, then he can do that. Now the omamar, now so that was the brisa. So now says Abaya, my rebbe rabba said Allah. He said on that lo shenu ela b'suuda. This is only talking about in a suuda that you don't have many people over there, so therefore you want to give honor to somebody else to go first. Then you can do that. But in shul not, the Kohen can't just honor Yisrael to go ahead of him and get an aliyah, to also be in Suya because they'll come to fight. So in other words, the Mifnei Dake Shalom of the Mishnah is not the basic fact that a Kohen gets an aliyah first. It's the fact that the Kohen does not have the right to voluntarily give away that aliyah, because that'll cause the problem. Again, that you're going to have everybody's going to argue then who gets the first aliyah. However, Amar Rav Masna, Hod Amar Beis Hakneses Loi. This that was saying you can't do that in Shul. Loi Amar and Elab Shabbos is Yom Tov. That would apply only on Shabbos and Yom Tov. The Shchichi Rabbim, because you have many people in Shul, and that'll come to arguments. Avo B'Sheni Uva Chamishi, but Monday and Thursday Loi, then it doesn't apply because Monday and Thursday you have fewer people in Shul, so there's less of a concern about that. Which Tosfos points out, nowadays we have many people in shul on Mondays and Thursdays and other weekdays as well, so therefore the din would apply equally well to those as it does on Shabbos and Yom Tov. The Kohen can't just give away his other Yom. He could go out, which they do sometimes, but if he's there in shul, then you have to give it to him. So the Gemara asks, Amy, so you're telling me that's so? The Kohen always gets the first aliyah. V'horav Huna, Kori, v'shabosis v'yam tovim. Kori, v'kahani, v'shabosis v'yam tovim. Rav Huna got the first aliyah, the aliyah of Kohen, and Rav Huna was Yisrael, and he received the first aliyah even on Shabbos and Yom Tov. And the answer is, Shiny Rav Huna, da'afil Rav Ami v'Rav Asi, kahani chashivi, de'ot Yisrael, make of habukaifilei. The difference is Rav Huna, even Rav Ami and Rav Asi, who were the great important Kohenim in Eretz Yisrael, and they were Rosh Yeshiva themselves, nevertheless, they were subject to Rav Huna. They considered Rav Huna greater than them in Torah, and they used to ask him Shilas and things like that. So therefore, there's no concern that there's going to be an argument because Rav Huna is getting the Aliyah first. Now, the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos on this Mishnah, he criticizes people who always give the Kohen the Aliyah first, even if he's an Am Oretz. The Rambam writes in Pirush HaMishnayos, all this that we're talking about, whether the Kohen should get first or whatever, Bnei Dakei Shalom, all of that, is only when the Kohen Gadol is not an Am Oretz. But if you have, like here, where Rav Huna is a great Tamid Chacham, then for sure he goes first. Kamamza Tamid Chacham, Kodim L'Kohen Gadol Am Oretz. And the Rambam very strongly criticizes people who do differently. On the other hand, by the time he wrote Yad HaChazaka, he seems to have accepted it. And he writes in Yad HaChazaka, Minag Poshut, the general Minag is that the Kohen always gets the first Aliyah, even if he's an Am Oretz. Afronim talk about there may be cases, for example, let's say you have in the shul, you have a Tamid Chacham who's Muflag, who's unusually great compared to everybody else. And then you also have various Kohenim, of whom some are Amia Oretz and some are at least lesser caliber Tamid Chachamim. Then at least if you're going to give a Kohen the Aliyah first, give one of the Tamid Chachamim. In other words, then at least you're not so blatantly disrespecting the Tamid Chacham Muflag. But basically the idea is that we don't look at whether the Yisrael is greater than the Kohen. We always give the Kohen first, and that way it avoids arguments. So the Gemara continues, Amar Abaya, Naktinan, we have the Kabbalah from our Rebbeim, Ein Sham Kohen Nisparda Chaviva. If there's no Kohen over there, the bundle is undone. So meaning, in other words, that then, the Levi loses his opportunity. So Rashi gives two explanations. One is that in that case, the Levi doesn't have his chance. The Levi gets his Aliyah only because there was a Kohen before him. But if there's no Kohen, then the Levi is not entitled to an Aliyah either. The second explanation, Rashi says, is that that it means you can do whatever you want. You don't have to put the Levi before the Yisrael. You could call the Yisrael and afterwards a Levi. Tosfos also brings that it would mean that the Levi would lane second. So then in that case, the order would be Yisrael, Levi, and then more Yisraelim. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is more like the first version in Rashi, that in that case, the Levi is not entitled to an Aliyah at all. In principle, you could call anybody for the first, and once you call Yisrael, you don't call a Levi after him. However, the minhag is, where possible, we do call a Levi first, and I think it's brought someplace that you're zoicha to Arichas Yomim if you do. So therefore, that's what they usually do. When there's Ein Kan Kohen, then you try to bring a Levi. If not, then you do a Yisrael, but if you call a Yisrael, you don't call a Levi after him, except from after. And V'omen Abaya says another din in this connection, Naktinan, we also have the Kabbalah. Ein Sham Levi Kode Kohen. If there's no Levi in Shul, but there is a Kohen, then the Kohen lanes the second Aliyah. Now the Gemara assumes that it means that you call a second Kohen, that you call one Kohen for the first Aliyah, and then a separate one, then a different one for the second Aliyah. So the Gemara asks, Aini, is that so? One Kohen should not lane after another Kohen, because of the gam of the first one, people might think that the first one is not really a Kohen, and that's why they have to call another Kohen. Similarly, one Levi should not lay in after another one because of the pogam of either one of them. People are not going to know. They're going to think one of them is pogum, but they're going to think they don't know which one. Either the first one is not a Levi, and therefore we needed to call up another Levi, or the second one is not a Levi or Yisrael. So you can't do that. So that the answer is ki kamunin ba'osa koyin. What we mean is the same koyin, and this is how we do. When there's no Levi, we do koyin bim koyin Levi, and the same koyin who got the aliyah, who got the first aliyah, also gets the second aliyah. Tosfos discusses, does he in fact make a separate set of brachas? And the answer is, as a matter of fact, that yes, he does in fact make the brachas again, which is how we do it. So the Gemara asks, Maishna Levi Achalevi Deikab Gamshneim, why is it that the Braisa is mentioning, why is it Rabbi Yochanan is saying, when it comes to a Levi after a Levi, you're saying there's a concern of Pagam by both of them, meaning Damri Chad Minayu Lav Levi, who, meaning in other words, either again, people are going to say the first one is not really a Levi, and therefore we needed to call up a Levi, or people are going to say the first one was a Levi, the second one is not, he's Yisrael. So the concern is about both of them. Koyinacha Koyinamri, Ami Chad Minayu Lav Koyinu. What about by a Kohen after a Kohen? Why are we saying Mishum Pagam Rishon? Isn't there the possibility of Pagam Shneim as well? People might think the first one was a real Kohen and the second one is not. The second one is a Levi or Yisrael or something. The answer is given to Muchsakon Ba'avur Dahai Sheni to Kohen Hu. Because we're talking about that the second one, we know that his father was a Kohen. So people are going to know, therefore, that the son is a Kohen as well. The Gemara says, "Hochinami the muchzaklan ba'avur dehai sheni the Levi who knew," and the same thing by a Levi. Wanted to say that you're talking about a case where we know the father of the second one is a Levi, and therefore there's no concern. People are going to think he's not a Levi. The answer is Ella. So not, why are we saying that that won't work? Because Amri, we have to be concerned. People might think Chad Minayu Ella. Amri, we're concerned people might say Mamzeres Unesina Nosiv. Maybe the Levi father married a Mamzeres Unesina, or Pasli Lazare, and he passed all his children, and his son therefore would be considered a Yisrael. Well, Hochanami, by a Kohen, you could say the same thing. Amri Grushoi Chalutza Nosiv. People might come to think that the father married a Grushoi Chalutza, but Achle Lazare, and he made his child a Cholo. So therefore, and then therefore, that's why they're giving him the second Aliyah. So why aren't we concerned about that also? The answer is, Soif, Levi Mika Kori. And the answer is, if the Kohen was a Cholol, he wouldn't be laning as a Levi either. He would be laning as a Yisrael. So therefore, there's no concern of Laz, and when a Kohen gets the second Aliyah, there's no concern people are going to think the second one is not a Kohen, because Manifshef either is a Kohen, or if he's a Cholol, he's a Yisrael. There's no possibility of him being a Levi. As opposed to a Levi, there's no such thing as a Cholol. He could be either a Levi or a Yisrael, and therefore we're concerned about the second one as well. That if a Levi gets an Aliyah after another Levi, people might think the second one was not a valid Levi. However, the Gemara asks Solomon, "Yeah, but who is the concern on behalf of Eva Yoshrin? If the concern is because people who are sitting there in Shul are going to think this, and who are sitting there the whole time during Kriyas HaTorah, what's the problem? Hokachozulei, they can see." That there was a Kohen and then another Kohen, and they can count and see that there were seven Aliyahs. And they know, therefore, that the Kohen who got the first Aliyah counts as one of the seven. Elol Yotzim, the concern is people who go out in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah, between one Aliyah and the next, they might not see that, and they might think, therefore, that now the second Kohen is getting an Aliyah, maybe the first one, they're not going to realize that they don't know how many Aliyahs there were given out after all, so they're going to think the first one didn't count as one of the seven, and therefore they had to start with another Kohen. So because of that is why we don't call one Kohen after another, or one Levi after another. With the exception, you know, it talks about in Shulchan Aruch, you have Dinim, for example. What if you have a city that's all Koyanim, or a city that's all, or for that matter, you have an interesting Din in Shulchan Aruch. If you have a shul where it's all Koyanim except for one Yisrael, then we actually do give the Yisrael the Aliyah first. Because then Fakek, we have the Mifnei Dak Shalom of our Mishnah. If you're going to say a Koyan gets first, the Koyanim are going to argue among themselves who gets first. Therefore, we give the Yisrael first, and then all the Koyanim laying one after another after him. Well, there you have no choice. Obviously, you have to give people Aliyahs, and therefore you give one Koyan after another, or one Levi after another, as the case may be. Tosfos, by the way, also mentions in this connection, what if there's only Kohenim? So Tosfos actually says a different din. If there's only Kohenim, then one person would get all seven Aliyahs and make a bracha before or after. So the halacha is not like that. In practice, what you do is you call up different Kohenim, but this kind of thing did come up during the lockdowns, during Corona, when there were places where you were able to have people had porch minyanim, but they weren't always able to get the 10 people together on one porch. And often you had where people were doing that, where one person would get an Aliyah over and over, or a few people there from one family would be rotating the Aliyahs between them and each making the bracha based on that, because you couldn't have other people come close enough to get Aliyahs.